Oh, I can hear you. That's good. Yeah,
because I was not talking inside.
We can't use any of that banter because you sounded so far away.
Yeah. Now we're.
Have you seen Triumph of the Will?
No.
Matthias? Mm-mm. This won't be in the podcast. Do you know what Triumph of the Will is?
You don't know what will or won't be in the podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. Well, then I don't care about asking this. Have you seen Triumph of the Will?
No, I don't think so. Do you know what it is? It's another Hitler movie, right?
It's the de facto Nazi propaganda documentary.
Right, that was...
In the 1930s. Directed pre-World War
II. By someone.
It was hired by Hitler. And we watched it for this like documentary class I took, and it was about the way that they would choose to shoot it with low angles and really wide lenses to show the prowess.
Yeah. Jojo Rabbit, Critics on Tap, we're here. I'm Bo, I'm drinking whiskey, and I'm talking Jojo Rabbit. Let's go around the circle and introduce ourselves.
My name is Matthias, and I am drinking the Kraken Spiced Rum with Pepsi.
Spencer, I'm drinking Evan Williams and Pepsi. Shout out to Pepsi for trying.
Jojo Rabbit. It was a dark comedy that I was tickled so much. And I went from being tickled and laughing a lot to a very, I don't know if you'd call it necessarily a three-act structure, but if like the second act got darker and more tonally serious for a little bit,
I'd call it a five-act kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it was probably like it's more to say it was maybe more of a five-act, and maybe somewhere between like act three to four, mm-hmm. it became
there is a distinct
bleak for a while
turning and then, point and then, into that back half.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying
that. And then it came humorous again, but I mean it to go from like laughing for half a movie to then actually tearing up, to by the end just like smiling like a little kid. I thought it was extremely well executed on such a weird tightrope of a subject matter to walk, and was just an amazing commentary on kind of being indoctrinated. So I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I recommend everybody see this movie and form your own opinions of it. Some people may not like it, apparently, and that's okay. But I thought it was brilliant. I think there's a lot of things to take away from it. What about y'all?
Did anybody else have this strong sensation of thinking about Moonrise Kingdom when you watch this movie?
A little.
I think the uniforms and the way that it starts off and the way that it's shooting, I could understand that. I never saw Moonrise Kingdom, but it definitely felt like...
Not to spoil that movie, but that's my favorite Wes Anderson movie.
Sam Rockwell felt a lot like the Ed Norton character in Moonrise Kingdom. He was like the camp leader.
And weirdly enough, also the Taika Waititi character. Like, Taika didn't write the role for him to be in mind. The only reason the producers jumped on it is they said, you can make this movie and we'll help produce it, but you have to play Hitler.
Yeah.
He said that. I don't know if specifically it was a print interview or he said that in like some talk show, you know, the run up to this movie. But, you know, his writing, and we've talked about this before in the past, when I mentioned the What We Do in the Shadows show early, like on one of the podcasts we had, but he's such a specific writer in both writing for children and for adults. And I guess that's what it is the adults and the children in Moonrise Kingdom, similar writing for children style, very like put the words of adults in their mouth, but also it somehow still feels believable because the children, the stakes of these kids are so high and they're performed so well. I would agree with the sentiment. I thought it was incredible. I thought it was really, really good. And a part of me at first, because there is, I mean, Moonrise Kingdom and Wes Anderson in general treads that line of almost being like a neutral emotion the whole time. Like obviously you feel things in his movies, but there is this weird neutrality to all the things that happen in this movie because you know it's kind of children's-esque storytelling, silly. It's all steeped in silliness of Wes Anderson. But this movie had big emotional ups and downs. You know, obviously the imagery of the Third Reich in and of itself is kind of tricky, but he doesn't shy away from that. And at first I thought, whoa, does that make it like tonally confused? But then I came across the idea of, no, that just means he's not afraid to both have a movie that's incredibly funny, incredibly kind of disturbing, and incredibly heartwarming, all kind of bunched together. Mm. I think tightrope is a great metaphor for that. You know, I can see why people were viscerally bummed out by this movie, because there was reports of it's both won a big major award at a film festival and critics are shitting all over it. So I can see why, though. But it is, I can see why people either fall off the tightrope or get all the way to the end and feel satisfied.
Interesting.
So I definitely recommend it to, I don't know everybody, because obviously we've literally had somebody who didn't like it. But I think if you're not willing to allow a movie to be more than just one genre, then it's definitely not for you. But if you're willing to kind of take almost a 5-in-1 movie, and yeah, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Yes.
On kind of an off topic before I get into my stuff, is it, do either of y'all think fans of Taika's Thor Ragnarok would enjoy this movie? Because I feel like
they might be totally different. It's different, though. Mm-hmm. It really is. There's a lot of Thor Ragnarok fans that solely love that universe.
Mm-hmm. If you're a Taika fan, you will, because if you've seen Hunt for the Wilder People, What We Do in the What We Do in the Shadows is definitely steeped in silliness the whole time. But Hunt for the Wilder People was much more of an indicator and companion piece to this movie than anything.
So the answer is not, it's not every Ragnarok fan is gonna like this, but the Ragnarok fans who were actual Taika Waititi fans are definitely going to enjoy this movie.
Yeah, I guess that was my question, because the thing about Taika is he has done, he finds a way to like bring himself into each one of his projects, but they all feel somewhat differently. You know, they don't, it's not like, oh, you love Thor Ragnarok, you're going to love this because you love Taika, you know?
Yeah.
And he was even being like, at one point, he was on board to do the Akira movie, which is completely not a comedy. I don't know if any of you, either of y'all, have seen Akira, but anyway, my thoughts on the movie are kind of like in that sense. Two things I want to say. One is Bo, anytime you say something tickled you, it just always feels wrong. Like it's coming from a serial killer. So I don't, there's something about your deep voice.
I thought it was very 40s,
you know?
Trope language. I thought it was appropriate for the movie we were watching.
It probably is something along the lines of like listening to podcasts like Conan O'Brien or other people who are just like, that just tickles me. Like it just,
Conan
like,
does say tickle.
Like
a lot.
It does. I think it is just those types of like language that is just sort of seeped in by people that are, and they're doing it in this kind of like tone and conversation where they're just like, I'm boiled over by this like style of humor. And that's just like, I don't know. Maybe it's just been on my mind because of that.
Really did not want to get into a physiological conversation about it. But yeah, okay,
well, we're in the weeds now, so fuck it.
And the other thing is, I think that what you said is a very, the thing about satirizing this kind of subject matter, right, is the exact way I started feeling when this film started, because it starts off with the title sequences and stuff with like archival footage, you know, you get like a couple of laughs, right, from the main character.
Great
and everything.
German
and
cover then, of the Beatles.
Yeah,
by the
and
way.
Then they go into this archival footage.
Starting with "I Want to Hold Your Hand" by the Beatles.
Yeah, and that archival footage threw me, because that, like, I was like, oh, I'm in for this movie. It's like really funny, you know. And then the titles start, and then I was like, oh yeah, it was really not a good time, you know. Like I got that, to this point that, where I was like starting to feel this weird thing. I was like, am I gonna like this movie because of the
but the brilliance of showing the fandom around Hitler at the time was like his rise to success.
That
like,
footage
it would
I
not
think was from
happened.
Triumph of the Will, which is the documentary that he the pro propaganda of German or the Nazi regime. But it was cool because they had it in that 60s, speaking of the song, they have the Beatles song "I Want to Hold Your Hand" but done in German. And it's almost like that. He was a rock star to them.
Yeah.
That he was the Beatles to Germany.
Yeah.
Before the war, he saved them from poverty.
And some
like,
of those
he
shots
was,
of the
he
crowds.
He was a deity to them, you know?
Like, while the Beatles were playing, like, it definitely felt like, you know, oh, this is from a time period that was a few decades ahead of the British invasion time period that happened here with the Beatles, but then all the way through present day, what's happening with like Trump rallies where you see, you know, tens of thousands of people crowds cheering. Like, and it is like, it is one of these things where you see people, and not to say, I'm sorry to the Beatles, you're not the same as Trump and Hitler. I apologize, those are two separate things. But I will say that there is a, like this fandom, this like kind of fervent fandom that happens with people. Did happen with Hitler, and a lot of people didn't realize it because we always kind of just shit on that time period as being like, oh, this is like some dark morose thing, and how did anyone in Germany, like, how did they not all rise up and fight against it? But I think that's why this movie was so important, to kind of say, you know, like, hey, like that's not how it was in the at the time.
There were rebels within the, you know, the ranks of people in Germany.
Yeah, there was so much misinformation that people just didn't have a full understanding of what was happening. And only with retrospect now, in hindsight, do we look back on it differently. I think that's what I would wager that that's what Taika Waititi kind of set out to do, especially not just in America, but over the last few years. With the rise of kind of fascism and right-wing extremism, you know, you got Boris Johnson in England and other places where you're just, you know, this is one of those things that's sort of like resurfacing and like rearing its ugly head again. And I feel like that had to have been like the catalyst for him to try to make this type of movie and kind of say like, hey, like not everyone who believes this is a bad person, they're just misinformed. So I feel like that was kind of what he was going for. I don't know how y'all feel about that.
Matthias, to continue what you were saying too as well.
I wasn't confused by it. To continue what I was saying, that's how I was starting to feel as that was going on, like this weird kind of like pull of like, oh, should we really be satirizing this kind of thing or whatever, all that kind of stuff, you know. But just like, what I was trying to say was that, like, that was my thought process going into it. And I think that's a very good question that you raised. And then this movie, just like that feeling, it really justified itself, you know. And especially like halfway through, mm-hmm. it did, you know. At first I was worried, but it slowly changed my mind. Just like the, you know, main character kind of goes through his changes and stuff. And that's mostly what I was just trying to say there. So for this movie, I will say that like, I will say that if it wasn't for that back half, which I know we're going to get into in spoilers, I don't know how much I would have loved this movie. I mean, I thought it was funny, and entertaining, and, Scarlett Johansson was really sweet in the whole thing. I thought she was really great as like the mother and giving us a lot of fun moments between her and the son and everything, you know. And and these kids are just fantastic. There's like, they were just completely like awesome. There's something there. I really loved all of that, but then it wasn't like amounting to like anything for me. And you know, clearly like Taika has something more to say or do there, you know. And I think that it's when that it hits that halfway point, and it really, I just really end up loving it even more, you know. It's hard to say without going into all that, like, much more about like how I feel about the movie. I will say that this, again, as you said, like if I you fit this into more of like Hunt for the Wilder People, you know, I won't. I would say like this is probably. I will say what we do in the shadows is better, and I think that also Thor Ragnarok is probably better, even though Thor Ragnarok fits in like a different kind of like world with its
you really believe that?
It's I did like this film, and there's some things that I really loved in spoiler territory, but at the end of the day, I think there's something, I don't know what it is about this film. I just didn't laugh as much. Maybe there's something about that,
maybe it is because it's taking a lot of chances and not trying to, you know. I think Taika, with, even though he took a lot of chances in Thor Ragnarok, it's still a Marvel movie. It's still an everybody movie. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you don't have to be a Taika Waititi fan to enjoy it, if you are, you'll love, you know, somehow gets suckered into watching a superhero movie yet again. I think it's somehow like the amazing part of that movie was it drew people from opposite sides of the fandom together, whereas this movie,
it didn't give a shit about the broad
appeal. Really, it really didn't care about a demographic. It knew that it needed to sort of exist in the mannerisms that it went about doing it. And it didn't seem afraid to lose a couple people along the way.
I think that,
which was surprising.
A lot of the thoughts of like maybe why it just wasn't, you know, I wouldn't put it up there with his other movies, I think is a spoiler territory thing, but
well, let's rock and roll. Let's do it.
But that said, I would still recommend people watch it. And it's a very sweet, charming, and somewhat emotional movie.
You should see Moonrise Kingdom.
You feel a lot of different. That was one thing.
I'm surprised there's a Wes Anderson movie you haven't seen. I mean, that's just
I don't know that I'm as big a fan of a Wes Anderson as other filmmakers are out there, but I was worried actually that this was like when it first started off, it was very Wes Anderson-y. So you weren't wrong in there. Like it was definitely like reminding
me. That opening sequence, like kind of reeked of that. There's very much a Moonrise Kingdom.
The color palette.
The trailer felt more like a Wes Anderson movie, which this movie steered away from in its own way.
Yeah. So I'm glad Taika put his own spin on it. So I can say that like that feeling went away completely, and because I didn't want another Wes Anderson movie. Especially from Taika, like I wanted to see what he would do, you know, and it felt more like a Taika movie than it would have a Wes Anderson movie. So I was really happy about that.
I think that's why I admire it a lot more. The more I'm thinking on it, the more what we've been stepped away from walking on the movie. I think that's why I find admiration. Cause I love Moonrise Kingdom. I'd actually put it in like my top 10 favorite movies, but I'm interested to see how I feel more about this movie because it really went to a place that I was not expecting and was both bummed out and subsequently really stoked on in like a 20-minute span. I went from being like, I don't know, like this might go in a place that I'm not buying into. And then the more I think about it, how clever and how well executed, and we'll talk about the kids in a sec, but both the kids, you know, when we watched Good Boys, I remember asking the question, which one of these kids is going to, like breakthrough from this. Both of those kids were unreal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had reservations, but there's some stuff and some moments that they have to get through in terms of the performance that are really tough. Man, they nailed it.
And to be clear, you're not talking about the young Nick Frost character.
It was a Simon Pegg Nick Frost.
The friend of JoJo, the main character. There was a walk and talk near the end of the film, the origin story of the two Shaun of the Dead leads. Yeah. Like
is that their grandfathers?
Yeah.
But man, even I would say that kid too. Though I mean, all three of them were
stellar beyond belief. And wonderful comedic timing.
And if I were to look back on Moonrise Kingdom, actually the actors in those movies, the kids at least, like the two main characters, the kids, you've seen it both, right?
Yeah. Oh
the God, boy
yeah.
and the girl. Multiple they're times. All right.
Yeah.
Like they're fine.
Or take with these kids.
I mean, there are moments in Moonrise Kingdom that's brilliant.
Kids in Jojo Rabbit and plant them in that movie. Yeah. It's an all-timer.
This movie was something different.
This movie seemed to show Taika's cards a little more because I love him a lot, but mm-hmm. I think we all written him off as some very specific, quirky New Zealand. I mean, even the pre-show, they watched some films that he made when he was, I would assume, in his mid-20s for these 48-hour film festivals, and they're wonky. Like he plays every character in them. Like it's just him, and he like shaves his beard to play different characters in it. And it's, you can see the influences and him like figuring out his voice. But I think this movie was we needed to see when the chips were down, what was he going to give us? And maybe that's why I'm so impressed is I think we saw the totality of his toolbox in this movie, both the balance of his humor and really, really good control of the emotional stuff.
Okay. I mean, if that's true, then I'm worried, to be very honest, because I hope that there's more from him. And again, we can
just because you show over a tool doesn't mean you have to show the full capacity of that tool.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that like David Fincher probably showed every tool in the 90s, but that doesn't mean he stopped making great films later on.
I would agree. Yeah. I think that's a good take too. Because like Seven is very similar. Like when you revisit Seven, you're like, man, you get everything in this movie.
Yeah.
And then he doubles down on it every time. And then, it doesn't mean he's just going to make the same, like he's not going to make Jojo Rabbit again, you know, the same movie with the same beat points and the same all funny or all sad or balance of both. You can see that whatever project's going to be thrown his way, whether it is going to be the second Thor movie that he's going to do, the Love and Thunder. I know he's not doing Akira anymore, right? Is that what you said? He left the project?
And people have dropped out, and I think he's one of the... I don't know.
But if you were to do something like that, I could see him... I don't know if Akira is the right content for him, but I think no matter what's given to him, he's going to make the most out of it with the best, with the right tools. And I think I feel excited for him. I feel really, really excited for him.
Okay.
I dig it. Yeah. I think it's something that's going to resonate over time. I think people will ultimately view it with a positive lens. And I'm really glad that someone like that is making this type of movie.
Me too.
It fucking tickles me.
He's just a good dude. He's tickle me timbers, dude. Yeah.
So, Critics on Tap, Jojo Rabbit, all that shit, review responsibly.
Bye-bye.
Bye.